This is Audible.
Paragon, Red Eye, Volume 3, Light Novel Harem, Genre Ecchi, Harem, Demons, Mystery, Romance, and School Life. Written by Lai Yurimoto. Narrated by Jimmy Pearson. Ryosaki Luka. This name is synonymous with good grades, good looks, and a good amount of mystery. I am an aberration in a world with supernatural beings, a half-angel and half-demon. I am finally getting a step closer to solving the mystery of the strangest day in Kusasaki City. When the police fell short, the media was complacent, and a mystery upon mystery was born. That is, when my time is not being occupied by these beautiful girls who keep on confusing me. Chapter 1. The Days to Come. The aftermath of the situation was much too quiet for it to have been free of inside interference after I defeated the teacher who had been a human in disguise. "So, let me get this straight," Hashimoto Asuka said, her brownie with melting vanilla scoops long forgotten. "The missing Yuri Sensei, who was actually a demon in disguise, is actually gone for good, thanks to you?" Kusasaki High had, after a day, reported to the police that one of their teachers had gone missing. Since no one was there to witness our exchange in the corridor, students that were questioned by the selected police officers sent there were not overly suspicious of the student body. Some egoistic maniac might have snapped over her strict marking, one could assume. Fortunately, teachers at the prestigious school were paid well, were people with plenty of contacts and influence themselves, and therefore managed to be somewhat unaffected by the pressure of a student, or more specifically, said student's family. The police investigation led to nothing, and in the end, a new teacher was brought in on an urgent basis to replace her before our summer break in July. It was now August, only a week left until school reopened, which meant I was studying again. I would not have ventured outside had Asuka Keiji contacted me. We were seated in Time Stop Cafe in the evening, with very few customers around us, providing ample privacy. The black and white tiled floor was like a chessboard reflecting the white LEDs which lit up the cafe with ambient lighting. I was in a black hoodie with black jeans, as always, while Detective Asuka was dressed in a black and white business suit, missing the tie, her hair up in a bun. "I would not say it's thanks to me," I replied, taking a sip of my iced black coffee, "though her departure was most unfortunate. I hadn't even met her before that week. You'd think she was some minor character who disappeared in the first few chapters of a manga." It certainly was my first experience with a demon, a powerful one at that. There was so much I didn't know myself. It was not like all these things were documented and stored, at least in places where I had access to them. "Aren't you getting ahead of yourself thinking of yourself as the hero? What if it's a detective manga and I am the main character?" Asuka gazed at me with half-lidded eyes. Her travel mug was filled with beer, I could just tell. What was it that made her take up daytime drinking, I wondered. "Also, are you drinking?" I simply asked her. "What, me? Of course not. That would be highly irresponsible. I'm an officer of the law and all." Her tone seemed to change when she said officer of the law, her lips twisting into an ironic smile, but I did not say anything. "I take it the investigations are not going so smoothly." "What investigations?" "Oh, I see." "Well, that was another thing." Asuka Keiji looked to the side, deep in thought. "Is there anything I can do to help you?" She sighed. "I wish I could think of something. I have to lie low for now, Ruka-kun. How's your school going?" I suppose that is one reason why she would be spending time with me. Usually she only contacted me if she needed my powers. "I'm first, as usual. I managed to get through half the year somehow," I said, taking another sip of my black coffee, almost finishing it. "They hold too many quizzes at my school." I had made no friends during my studies in the library, focused only on my books. My classmate, Fujiwara Arya, was close to me, in more ways than one. She wasn't a complete human either. And then there was my senior, Shiragane Nagisa, the daughter of this city, Kusasaki's police commissioner. Nagisa Senpei had been hospitalized at the end of summer's fiasco when I had battled with and defeated Yuri Sensei, a demon in disguise. She had turned up in time to give her exams to not be held back a year, and we barely found any time to talk. I had a feeling she was sort of avoiding me, which, all things considered, was normal. She was a normal human. I opened my coffee cup and tilted the ice cubes into my mouth, nibbling on them. "Huh," Asuka Keiji observed. "Isn't that a sign of iron deficiency, chewing ice cubes? Do your type even get malnutrition?" "I can't be certain, frustrating as it is, but a good diet helps maintain my strength," I said, crushing the cubes in my mouth and swallowing. The tip of my tongue was left white cold. There was, of course, my training, which I will get to in another time. It wasn't something to be discussed with outsiders like Asuka. "Well, how strong are you, anyway?" she asked me. I tapped my foot against the floor. Strength among angels and demons? It was a tricky subject. There were those with very little ether, the essence which granted us our powers. Like mana, some would say, but used it very proficiently, or those with lots of ether and spells to throw around. This was all hearsay to me. A half-angel, half-demon who was not welcomed in either community. I was, in some ways, frustratingly as uniformed about some things as an ordinary human. But still, I had placed my first step into this other world. I'd faced down Yuri Sensei and survived. "I can do this," I remembered thinking to myself on that day. I just had to tempt fate, of course, because from that day onwards, everything went to hell. We parted ways soon afterward, and I left my apartment to study. "Hey, these grades don't keep themselves up by themselves." On my way, I opened my phone, performing a routine check for messages. Aria-chan had sent me a picture of some melon bread she had baked, a bread that had no melon and was in fact filled with cookie dough. "Look what I baked today, Luka-kun." My thumb hovered over the screen while my mind tried to come up with a reply. Last time, I replied, "Okay," and Aria-chan responded with a dot dot dot. I don't think she was pleased with my effort. "They look delicious," I typed. After some consideration, I added a smiley face at the end and hit send. "Hey, stop it!" I looked up from my smartphone. In a park to my right, a group of boys and girls had surrounded another girl. Two girls and two boys were dressed in a school uniform as well, although it disregarded pretty much every dress code for the students. Then again, if they were bullying another student, the dress code was not something they would be keen to note. I narrowed my eyes as I noticed the state of their bullying victim. Her school coat was tossed on the ground, and her shirt was crinkled and unbuttoned. It didn't take a genius to tell that she had been forcibly stripped. I felt my mouth pull down into a frown. What an ugly sight. Of course, I wasn't going to stand for it. I stepped into the park, white light from the lamps tossing my shadow at multiple angles on the ground. I made no move to mask my movements, and soon all eyes fixed on me. "Who are you?" One of the boys squinted at me. He was taller than me, lanky, with spiky orange hair and earrings in both his ears. The other boy was shorter, but with broad, imposing shoulders, with silver hair that covered one eye. One of the two girls with them had blue hair and wore makeup. The other had short, black hair with red lipstick. The victim on the ground was a beautiful girl, her face soft and delicate, with a terrified expression. Her purple hair, which fell to her waist, was messy. I think some of her bangs were uneven as well. Was it a haircut done at home, meaning an accident, or one done at a salon, like a professional accident? Me? "Just an ordinary passerby," I said, blinking innocently. "What are you doing at this hour? Isn't school off for you kids?" "Chet, who are you calling kids? Make sure your own balls have dropped first, bastard." The silver-haired boy spat at my feet. "Get lost." "Oh, man, really?" I stretched my neck to the side, hearing a satisfying pop. "I'm afraid I have a problem with your treatment of your classmate. Shouldn't you be using the last days of summer classes to actually improve yourselves?" The blue-haired girl now spoke, watching me with clear disdain on her face. "Are you interested in this bitch, girly boy? Or do you just want to go home and think for yourself? Ah, I did the right thing, helping a poor, defenseless girl. I am such a good person." She put on an airy tone, pretending to gush. Geez, morons nowadays. Do you think that every guy trying to help someone of the opposite sex is trying to sleep with her? I said, shaking my head in dismay. High school isn't even the time to be getting into such relationships. They make you lose focus, I prattled on, fully aware of how much I was annoying everyone, maybe even the victim in this case, if the dumbfounded look on her face was anything to go by. The two boys, on the other hand, had had enough of my yapping. The orange-haired one took out a switchblade.
I don't care if you take some martial arts classes or some other bullshit, but I'm gonna teach you a lesson here.
He lunged for me, slashing at my face.
Get away!
The girl on the ground shouted. Yeah, totally a brawler with a weapon. I simply stepped back, letting the amateur swipe fall short several inches in front of my nose. I don't suppose you'll listen to reason and stop if I threaten to call the police for what you're doing.
And what are we doing?
The girl with the bold red lipstick asked. She had a calculating gaze, probably the brains behind the operation.
Guys, just stop. Your problem is me, right?
The girl on the ground had stood up now, and I had noticed her scraped knees. How long was she being pushed around by these bullies? And she was declaring herself to be the problem as well. I tried not to sigh at the familiar scene. Before coming to Kusasaki High, I had seen many students at my previous school get bullied.
You're right,
the girl with the black hair said. Tuya, Shinji, take care of this guy. And you, Haruka? Her expression turned into one of cruel glee. Strip, she commanded. I was shocked at first. When the girl Haruka only stared, the little bitch before turning to her blue-haired friend. Mizuki, strip her. How cruel, I muttered. The stockier boy, either Tuya or Shinji, although he looked more like a Shinji, came at me with a well-executed high kick aimed at my head. He had probably attended some Taekwondo lessons. I ducked, stepped past him, and spun 180 degrees, kicking his supporting leg out from under him, and swiftly elbowed his partner in the solar plexus, who was charging towards me. The two of them fell down, tasting dirt. For good measure, I lifted my foot and brought it down on who I suspected was Shinji, knocking the air out of his lungs and fight out of his spirit. Glancing up, I met the eyes of three girls, one of whom appeared to be considering her life choices, and all of whom were terrified. I resisted the urge to deadpan. I hadn't even gone hard on these humans. It is in your interest to get lost from here, I said, putting steel into my voice. I didn't differentiate between male or female when it came down to a fight, and I was feeling the desire to punch these bullies. After I check your phones for any pictures you might have taken of the girl, I added, noticing that Haruka had been stripped down to her bra. On second thought, I should teach you a lesson regardless, I said, tapping into my ether. A simple trick played by the demons was to multiply what a human being was already feeling several times. Someone is sad? Increase it. Make it linger. Cause them to fall into depression. Happy? Intensify it. Turn it to ecstasy. Cause that happiness to end in a regretful decision made in euphoria. Jealousy? Turn it into envy, and that envy into hate of someone. I just took the fear they felt and pulled the lever. The two girls began to quiver, skin turning pale.
I'm sorry,
the little bitch whispered, taking out her phone and throwing it on the ground hard.
I'm sorry,
she yelled before running away and out of the park, her blue-haired friend following suit. Haruka got up shakily.
What did you do to them?
She asked, snatching her shirt and putting it back on. Don't worry about it. Are you going to be okay? I asked, giving a non-answer to her. Her eyes flitted towards a small puddle on the ground with a splatter of drops leading away from it. I stared, honestly surprised. I didn't mean to make those girls wet themselves.
I think I will this time. She threw her phone to the ground so I can delete everything she has done to everyone else too.
I see. Well, I have to study, so I'm off. With that, I turned around and began to walk out of the park. Haruka watched as the boy walked away, a grateful smile on her face. She wondered which school he went to and if she could get to know him better. She didn't even know his name, though. But that just adds to his mysterious charm, she thought, blushing to herself. Chapter 2. Fujiwara Arya. Aria knew she was a cute little child, and the matrons at the orphanage often said that it would be only a matter of time until she was adopted. It's such a shame, though. She falls ill so often. Who's going to take a sickly child who spends half her time in the hospital? One worker gossiped with another in the kitchen. The poor thing. The doctors can't even find out what's wrong with her. At this rate, we can't hope for her to get adopted. Isn't she 5 already? The older she gets, the harder it will be for her to get adopted. Aria, who had stayed inside instead of going out to play with the other children, picked up everything the two were saying. It was hurtful. Aria could not control her sickness. She would constantly get fevers and feel lethargic. She spent a lot of time not speaking to anyone else as well, and despite being cute, she was considered a dull child. Sometimes she would fall asleep randomly, leading to her being diagnosed with narcolepsy. Aria resolved to just work at the orphanage if no one would adopt her. She would study hard at school and get good grades, and then they would have let her work there. She would also not tell lies to children, telling them they were pretty and about to get adopted soon, and then gossip when they would be playing outside. During one of her routine visits to the Kusasaki General Hospital, Aria was wondering whether she should become a doctor. It was then that she caught the eye of Fujiwara Mio, a child specialist, walking by the pink-haired girl as she waited for her turn in the waiting area. "Hello," Mio said, smiling brightly. "What are you here for, little angel?"
"Angel? Me?" Aria asked. "What's an angel?"
"Someone who holds no ill wishes for other people,"
Sachiko Bachan, the one currently accompanying Aria from the orphanage, explained. Aria liked Sachiko Bachan. Sure, she was the oldest matron at the orphanage and always wore long dresses, smelled like soap, and had cheeks which drooped like one of those dogs she saw once, but Sachiko Bachan was always nice. While Aria was trying to digest the definition of an angel, Sachiko turned to Mio.
"Can we help you, Sensei?"
"I would like to take a look at this girl."
"Oh, sorry, I should have introduced myself first. I'm Fujiwara Mio, a child specialist."
She punctuated her introduction with a bow, which Aria got up to return hastily.
"Hello,"
Mio said, smiling brightly.
"What are you here for, little angel?"
"I am Kozuki Sachiko, this girl's caretaker,"
the elderly woman said, returning with a shorter bow, before grasping Aria's hand, well used to children scampering off when adults engaged in a conversation.
"Caretaker? Ah, it's like that, is it?"
Mio-sensei's black eyes reflected sorrow as she understood what was not said, and took a hand out of the pocket of her white coat, stroking Aria's head.
"Poor thing. How about I examine you myself? What is she in for?"
The last question was directed towards Sachiko, who brought a large blue folder up. Aria's medical records neatly organized.
"The doctors haven't been able to figure out yet. We've been visiting them for 2 years, but to no effect."
"Oh. Well, maybe something special might happen today, right?"
Mio winked in what she thought was a cutesy manner at Aria. Aria found it a little creepy. The reason for Mio's frank attitude soon became apparent when the matron and her ward walked into the doctor's office to find Mio sitting behind the desk. She looked, pretending to be surprised.
"Hi, Aria-chan. We meet again."
The doctor got out of her seat, sweeping the little girl up into her arms before placing her on the cold metal stool for patients. Aria fidgeted as her short legs swung in the air, unable to reach the floor.
"I've already seen your records, but let's go through again, shall we, Aria-chan?"
The beautiful lady addressed Aria, and Aria didn't know what to do. Usually they didn't talk to her much, and her caretakers answered for her most of the time.
Yes, Fujiwara-sensei. Uh-huh, she's so polite,"
Mio gushed before coughing and resuming her professional facade, only to resume her facade of acting like a doctor to a patient that was not actually ill. Mio could sense that Aria was one of her kind, or partly, an actual angel. She could tell from the moment the little girl set foot in the hospital that she was an angel, her magical core malnourished. The technical term was ether, but Mio preferred to just simplify the concept. Call it magic, call it ether, call it chakra. Whatever the energy was, it didn't matter. What did matter was that the girl had lots of it in a human body. All energy produced heat in one way or another, which meant the poor girl had been experiencing fevers for no cause habitually without any cold or infection, as well as exhaustion, as since her developing magic needed a lot of fuel to sustain it. Energy was sapped from her physical body, causing her to faint several times, which some idiot had labeled as narcolepsy. Mio made a show of checking the girl's throat, her internals with her stethoscope, and then her reflexes as well. Everything was normal, if not for testimonies of several adults. All physicians would insist that she was faking it. Looking at her records, the doctor noted that the frequency of her fevers and fainting episodes was increasing, no doubt due to her growing magical core. Arya-chan was already 5. It would stabilize soon enough if one day the girl didn't pass out and all of her life force, used to work her internal organs and the heart, which was where both angels and demons had their cores, was drained to develop her angel half. "Everything seems fine, on the surface at least," Mio told Sachiko, before turning to the pink-haired girl, twisting on the rotatable stool. "What sort of diet is offered at the orphanage, may I ask?"
"Diet? Are you suspecting our food quality?"
Sachiko's eyes were sharp, and Mio was under the impression she had somehow offended the woman. She had just asked a question, and there were no questions that couldn't be asked. At least, that was how it appeared to Mio's mind, but she didn't know how to explain that to a human like Kozuki Sachiko. When in doubt, just apologize.
"Arya-chan here needs lots of energy to get by. She just has a fast metabolism. I was thinking maybe she needs to eat more."
Mio smiled, subtly using a bit of magic to make Sachiko susceptible to the idea. Affecting the mind was her specialty.
"We have a rigid scheme for children, healthy and sick aside. I should put in a request for Arya-chan, then. What adjustments do you suggest to her diet, then?"
Sachiko asked, and Mio could just tell that this woman, dressed in simple, old clothes, would go a long way to take care of her charges. What Arya needed was food which fed her magic, not just her body. Currently, from her cursory ether scan, Mio could tell that more than half the energy Arya's body made went towards her magical core.
"I'll write you a list,"
Mio said, and began to write in a scrawl that only other health professionals could understand.
"I will also prescribe you some supplements, so be sure to take them as well, preferably with a glass of milk."
The list was just a bunch of healthy food. The real cure would be those supplements, which Mio could charm with her magic less suspiciously. All she needed to do now was figure out what the address of the orphanage was.
"Thank you for everything, Mio-sensei,"
Sachiko bowed, and Arya got off her stool to bow as well.
"It was nothing," Mio stood up to return the bow. "If it is okay with you, can I visit your orphanage from time to time? Check up on Arya-chan?"
Sachiko smiled wide.
"That would be lovely."
Fujiwara Mio would then consistently visit the orphanage for Arya while making surreptitious moves to scope out any other special child present at the orphanage using her sensory abilities. It was 2 stories tall. The smallest children on the first floor, which also had the kitchen, the rooms for the matrons, and was largely a playpen. The second floor had a small library, which was meant for a peace and quiet, encouraging children to read. There were also a few computers to impart digital literacy. Fujiwara Mio found it impressive, to say the least. Did this place have a rich sponsor? It seemed privately run.
"Arya-chan,"
she greeted, walking straight into the well-constructed building. The workers, most of them female, recognized her and smiled.
"How are you doing, Fujiwara-sensei?"
one asked.
"I'm doing good. What about you, Kobayashi-san?"
Mio returned the greeting, making idle chat.
Not something she was a fan of, but she could bear with it.
As little Arya ran over to her, growing more active with every passing day. The secret had been Mio imbuing her supplemental vitamin gummies with her own magic. Pure, filtered magic, something that could halt Arya's magical core sucking her body of all nutrients and energy. Usually, this was delivered via breastfeeding for the babies of angels and demons. The fact that Arya was lacking it was a telltale sign that she had been abandoned at birth. Sachiko, who was also the head matron at the orphanage, would confess the same when Mia would ask her about it 2 months later from their first meeting.
When she was handed over, her release was already signed. We never saw any sign of the parents or parent.
Sachiko grumbled over a cup of coffee.
That's more than what can be said for the poor kids who are here but don't have it signed. They can't get adopted even if they wanted to be.
Mio gazed at the children playing inside, messing about with the toys, and a few rare souls sitting on the fluffy cushions near the window, reading some small, colorful books. There were around 40 kids at the orphanage in total. How many were stuck in this legal limbo? How many of them knew their parents? How many wanted to get adopted? Is Arya-chan going to be adopted soon? Mio asked tenderly, almost whispering.
Well, one request did come, but she's refused it. The other kids are avoiding her because of it.
The old woman sighed, her shoulders slumping. Mio did a double take, almost spitting out her coffee.
Why?
Sachiko looked at her in a way Mio could not describe.
Why do you think?
The doctor caught sight of Arya, playing alone with a large stuffed frog. Even if she was healthier, the orphanage had cliques and groups, a hierarchy that placed the older kids at the top. The little angel felt something watching her, and instantly honed in on Mio. Arya smiled.
Can I adopt her, Sachiko-san?
I thought you'd never ask.
And so, Arya became Fujiwara Arya, and Fujiwara Arya got introduced to a whole new world.
I'm an angel?
Arya's eyes were sparkling in wonder.
That is just a word. You are so much more, Arya-chan, Mio said. Are you ready to train yourself?
Yes, let's go, let's go!
Arya pumped a fist in the air. Mio giggled.
How about we bake some melon bread first?
Melon bread?
Round cream-colored beans were placed neatly on the baking tray, fresh from the oven with a light crisscross pattern on them. The taste was still as wonderful as the day her mother had taught her to make a delicious treat. Arya took a picture, sending it to Luca, before trying one.
Mmm!
Arya almost moaned at the taste. She loved sweets.
Kachan, try it as well.
Arya turned to her mother, offering a sample. Fujiwara Mio looked nothing like Arya, with jet black hair that had a blue sheen and sharp eyes that would come off as a glare. A few people even questioned if they were truly mother or daughter. Fujiwara Mio would smile at such people and leave them wondering about how right their assumptions were. Mio loved Arya like any mother loved her daughter. She didn't have to be a biological one to obtain all the love. It came out perfectly, her mother said, taking a bite from it, before smiling at her.
Yes, I'm sure the kids will enjoy it tomorrow, said Arya.
Her mother had invited a bunch of children from an orphanage in Kusasaki City.
That would be nice. I'm going to take a bath now,
Arya said and walked upstairs to her room. The house she lived in was beautiful, not very traditional and more like a Western home. It was a large home for two people only, as her father spent most of his time abroad for work. Arya knew, though, that even if she pretended like she was a normal person, the reality was different. Throughout her life, she had wished to meet someone like her, someone close to her age who she could be friends with without hiding anything.
I wonder if Luca-kun would join us if he knew what we do,
Arya spoke to herself softly. There was no one around to speak most of the time, and both she and her mother had this little habit of talking to themselves. She wondered if Luca did it too, living alone in his apartment. Sliding off her clothes, she stepped into her bathroom, examining herself in the mirror. Arya frowned, turning herself side to side before sighing.
They're growing again. I'm going to need a larger cup size soon.
No wonder her bras had felt a little tight. Her waist was thin as ever, with her abs slightly toned. After cleaning herself thoroughly before climbing into the warm, relaxing water of her bathtub with her waterproof smartphone.
School is only a week away,
Arya said to herself, organizing her schedule. Throughout her summer vacation, she had made no plans to meet Luca. She had her own plans, and Luca had his own work to do as well. And even if I did ask him to hang out with me, things would get complicated, Arya thought, bringing her knees up. She had secrets to keep as well, outside of the one that Luca knew. She couldn't risk involving him in battles he had no clue about. It's going to start soon, isn't it? She looked up, still talking to herself. Unbeknownst to her, in the shadows and in daylight, it had already started. Chapter 3. This is way over my head. It was September. Summer vacation had ended, and the schools had started again. The expansive green gardens with their carefully cultivated flora, wooden benches for students, the freshly painted and maintained building in tones of blue and white greeted me with a familiar coldness. Around me, students met up with their friends, walked with their cliques, politely chatted with one another at the entrance, leisurely changing from their outdoor to indoor shoes. Yo, you're Ryazaki, aren't you? I flicked my shoe locker closed before turning to look at the boy who had talked to me. Yes, that's me. Is there something you want? He was skinny. That was the first thing I noticed. The second thing I noticed was how pale he was, his light blonde hair cut uniformly and parted over his left eye. My name is Masuda Shuhei. I'm a second year. Masuda Shuhei? I have never heard of him before. He wasn't in my class or the soccer club, so why did his name sound familiar? Was there something you wanted, Masuda-senpai? Just call me Shuhei, Ruka-san. Do you have time to talk? Don't we have to attend the school assembly? I asked, raising an eyebrow. Kusasaki High School had a special occasion of welcoming back students after each break, except for one-day holidays. Being in the school assembly meant listening to the principal and staff congratulating themselves for the institution that was Kusasaki High. The student body representative, usually the student council president, extolled the virtues about being a student at the school and ending with the school anthem. I'll help you skip the school assembly, he said. I paused. The offer was a very tempting one. Now, that is an offer I can't deny, I said. I also wanted to know more about this guy. Although people had no qualms talking about me behind my back, they rarely struck up a conversation with me. Allow me to show the way, he inclined his head slightly, hand over his heart like a polite waiter. Did he wait tables a lot? Do you work part-time a lot? I asked instead, following Shuhei-senpai. Yes, a lot. Call it a hobby of mine, ne? He grinned, his eyes crinkling as well. I nodded and began to walk up the stairs he was leading me toward. No student at the school needed to work. If you wanted to, you could stay at the library until night to do your research for homework and projects or studying tests, or make use of the common rooms equipped with projectors to watch the latest movies, one way or another procured by the people who ran the school. If it were not for the small size of this place, it could have easily been something much more. Expand the land a little bit more, prop up some buildings to have departments, and easily turn this into a small university. Of course, then Kusasaki would lose the title of the most expensive school in Japan. It was somewhat expected, but I was being led towards the roof of the school. They have CCTVs on the roof, you know, I quipped. It was not against the rules to go to the roof of school buildings here, except for the laboratories. On the contrary, the roofs were properly fenced and fitted with benches and vending machines. What was against the rules was getting caught missing the school assembly. I didn't want to mar my clean record, especially since I'd treaded on thin ice by relying on the school's scholarship. If word got out to the people quite displeased with my achievements, I would not have the political capital to prevent them from making a bigger fuss than merited over me trespassing a roof. It's okay. I came here when I was a first year. The cameras are on loop until the assembly finishes, Shuhei-senpai remarked very casually. How do you know the cameras are on loop? I asked. Did you do something? That would be telling. Who would dare to do such a criminal thing? Alas, we were just on the roof for a chat, not knowing that cameras were on a loop. You want me to come with or not? There's still time for me to make it to the assembly. You have 5 minutes to provide proof the roof is safe, I said before checking the time on my phone. Actually, make that 3 minutes.
Geez, you're intense, aren't you? I know the cameras loop because it's a school secret. If you read any of the messages hidden in the previous yearbooks or the newsletters some of the clubs publish, you'd know about it. I know this one works for sure because my brother tested it out when he was a student here.
Wait, what?
What do you mean, school secret?
I had not participated in any extracurricular activity beyond the minimum required of me.
It's older students leaving behind legacies. One of them hacked the system to make the cameras loop during the school assemblies.
Shuhei Senpei explained to me further, pushing the door open and walked outside. I stayed at the threshold.
How does the loop work? The school assemblies are held like clockwork throughout the year, and after the sun has completely risen, I'm not sure about the exact time, but the footage is repeated until 20 minutes past 8, giving us plenty of time to skip the assembly and reach our classes,
Shuhei Senpei explained.
You'll be surprised at how many... That is... But why would someone just do that?
Surely the school would have picked up on it and fixed it, or were the students allied in not bringing it up to the authority?
Well, why not? Makes school life much more interesting, especially if you are someone who's got everything else money can buy.
Shuhei Senpei shot a wry grin towards me, walking further out onto the roof. He looked up and waved in a direction where I presumed a camera was located.
Sometimes, we just like to make our own adventures.
Your own adventures, huh? I decided to join him on the roof after all.
So, what was it that you wanted to talk about? Straight down to business, then. I guess the rumors were correct. You really don't waste any time at all, Ruka-san. You're not part of any club at this point in time, are you? I hear you participate in some practice soccer matches, but you're not really a part of the team,
Shuhei Senpei started, walking towards the vending machine.
He had researched me well, but none of those facts about me very particularly secret. What will you drink?
Black coffee, I said instantly. Unsweetened, of course. It doesn't matter if it's warm or cold.
Eh? That's bitter as hell, man. I'll have some orange juice like a normal person.
He scanned the shelves before pressing the buttons.
So, can I interest you in joining a club?
He asked as two cans rolled down.
What sort of club is it now?
I asked, accepting the brown can from him.
So far, I was just a part of the Going Home Club, which did just what it said on the label. There was a wide variety of societies at Kusasaki High, but none of them really caught my eye. A new one. I'm thinking of starting my own.
Oh. Oh. Now, this was interesting.
See, Kusasaki High was decades old, as were most of its clubs, covering everything from handicrafts to mechatronics. The history of each club was rich, and some were just downright exclusive, which commoner students like me didn't venture towards.
And what will it be about? Are you even sure we can make one in the first place? Are there any rooms even available for us to operate from? I barraged him with questions, unable to hold in my curiosity.
Slow down!
He took a gulp from his cheery orange can.
Ah, that hits the spot. So where were we?
Oh, right. He made a show of shaking his head like he had forgotten what the conversation was about.
The society. Remember the black fire case a few years back, which occurred at a very humble school?
No fucking way. I clamped down on my reaction, putting on my best poker face. What did this boy, Masuda Shuhei, know about that? Masuda. Something niggled at the back of my mind. I knew this name.
Yes, it was 7 or 8 years ago, I think. What about? Man, you don't have to look so bored. Anyway, on the surface, we will be... You know, I haven't thought that far yet. But beneath the surface, there are certain things we can look into. What if I told you that I have a rough idea of how the fire started?
He looked at me, leaning against the bench like a lazy cat, but there was a sharp look in his eyes, a sly curve to his lips.
Ah, so he was that type. You wouldn't know there was anything devious about him until he shoved a knife up to its handle in your chest. You know, I fail to see how making a club is going to help you in any way regarding that, if anything. It is just going to earn us the ire of the teachers. Fellow hoity-toity students are going to be short one storage room in the club building, push us needlessly into the spotlight,
Shuhei Senpei finished.
It's not hard to make a club, just an unwritten rule that you're not supposed to. Who made such a stupid rule?
Are clubs here just for rich girls and boys to polish their personal statements for when they apply abroad? His voice was calm, but the look on his face was intense.
You know, your stance is vague as hell. Are you trying to say that making a club is just a distraction? Underneath which is a motive about challenging the values of this school, and underneath that is the motive to investigate the Black Fire case? I smacked my palm onto my forehead. The only thing I had gained out of this meeting was to check out the material published by other students to figure out what sort of secrets the school had.
Shuhei Senpei was looking at me with a huge smile on his face, as if he had some newfound respect for me.
Exactly. You're the first one to get that, though. I had a good feeling about you, you know?
What the hell?
Count me out, and while I'm at it, let me advise you against that particular course of action. How about we meet up in the library afterwards and discuss more?
Just how much do you know?
The day Kusasaki High's laboratory ended up in flames was the day when Nissan stopped visiting me. Perhaps I could find a clue to his whereabouts as well as I looked into the case. In the meantime, though, I would also have to look into this quirky senior of mine. There was no doubt about it, I had run into the name Masuda before. Since it wasn't related to studies, it had to be related to my only other pursuit.
Wow, wasn't that a sad way of looking at my life? I needed to get a hobby someday.
Okay, the library then. How about we do it tomorrow? There are a few more prospective members I have to scout. You could try to talk me out of my supposedly foolish plan when we discuss things in full detail. Deal?
Sure, deal. Thanks for letting me skip the assembly, by the way.
No problem, my cute little Kohai. Just stick to me and you'll be bending the rules in no time at all. Do it well enough and you'll graduate without ever getting caught.
On that inspirational note, we parted. I walked into my empty classroom and took my seat. The first person to walk in was Aria, diligent as ever as my class representative.
Luka-kun,
she said, rushing over to me.
I haven't seen you since the summer break began. Where have you been?
She was beautiful as always, a ball of energy I couldn't comprehend. She leaned over my desk, staring directly into my face.
Have you been eating well? You look a little weaker than I remember.
I've been fine. How did your break go? Did anything fun?
Lots of things.
I could tell we were both hiding things from each other, but that was fine. I didn't have to know everything about her life just because I was her friend.
Oh, I told my mother about you as well. She wanted to meet you,
Aria revealed. She fidgeted a bit, looking to the side.
So, whenever you're free, want to come over to my place?
It was unfortunate that the door chose to open that instant. Students began to roll in. A couple of girls looked at me and then began to whisper furiously among themselves. Let's talk later, okay? I suggested, and Aria nodded, walking over to her own seat. Soon, it felt like the whole class was staring at me. My seatmate sat to my right, a girl with a golden pixie cut. She kept sneaking glances at me, trying to be discreet, but it was far too obvious. Unless her ploy was that she knew that I knew she was sneaking glances at me, so I would be the one to ask her why and initiate a conversation instead of the other way around.
Can I ask you something, Ryusaki-san?
She spoke with an Osakan accent. I blinked. Sure?
Are you and Aria going out?
She inquired. What? No, I deadpanned. We're just friends.
Well, would you go out with her? If you had the chance, of course. Are you kidding me? High school is not the time to be dating. There are so many other factors to be considering. Yeah, you clearly look like a virgin. You do know people can form an understanding between themselves? Trust me, they're greater bookworms than you getting into Harvard and shit, and they're still finding time to date. You just need someone who gets ya.
Well, that turned into a lecture.
Also, what is it with these humans and the propensity to use the word virgin as an insult? There was nothing special about it.
Well, if it feels possible for me, I'll date. I just don't know whom, nor am I about to go attend any mixer.
Sure. By the way, do you even know my name?
Shit. My only weakness, that is, utter disregard to my surroundings, which didn't tie into my goals.
You didn't even remember, did you?
Kishimoto Kei, right? Her eyes lit up.
Whoa, you remembered.
My friends think you're really rude, though.
Your friends think they're too good for a convenience store, Bento, I retorted. She snickered.
Kinda true, but I like them. They won't stay this way forever, she said.
Our homeroom teacher entered then, and the conversation ended, but as we rode and bowed to the teacher, I couldn't help but think about Kishimoto's words. Humans changed a lot, and all the time. The only difference between myself now and when I was younger was my vocabulary and knowledge. My mindset hadn't changed since my days in the orphanage. I hadn't even entertained the notion that people could change so drastically and overcome the traits instilled in them by their childhoods. Thinking that everyone else around me was arrogant except for a few, wasn't it me who was ironically arrogant in my self-proclaimed humbleness?
Is there still no sign of the missing teacher? Asuka, as was the norm, was slumped against her desk.
All the good, promotion-worthy crimes keep evading me. Kenji, can't you go and burn down a home? Maybe if I arrest you, they'll promote me.
Kenji looked at his colleague with disdain from behind his glasses. Why don't you head over to the south of the city? Step on a landmine or two, get involved with the groups over there.
Man, I was joking. Are you gonna get coffee?
No, I need to check some CCTV footage, so I'm headed out. Kenji stated, and without another word, walked away.
Rude. Asuka almost pouted. Her last case had involved a lengthy stakeout to find a missing girl, only for that middle school idiot to have tried to elope with her much older boyfriend, a boyfriend who had quite some experience with evading pursuit despite not having any criminal record. Idly, she opened up her smartphone and began to read the news.
Let's see what else is going on in this exciting city, she said, scrolling through her feed,
stopping at the headlines for the election of Kusasaki's new mayor.
Oh, a woman as well as running this time?
On her screen was the image of a stern, old woman, her face free of wrinkles but somehow sharp lines defining her age nonetheless. Asuka scrolled through the article, reading through the woman's Masuda Kryoku campaign goals. The development of Kusasaki equally, fighting the disparity between classes and facilities. Same old shit as everyone else.
Asuka leaned back in her chair, yawning. She wanted to go home and sleep, but the paperwork for her last case was pending.
Coffee it is, then.
She got up, grumbling. She had only taken one step before she turned back, picking up her phone.
Wait a second. Masuda Kyoko?
Masuda Kyoko.
She seemed like a no-nonsense, all-business woman wearing a suit and minimal makeup in her picture hung on the wall. The fancy adornment of her person was a short white pearl necklace around her neck. She seemed familiar with her blonde hair, but her stern expression set off any similarity to the person I was thinking of. Was she connected to Masuda Shuhei somehow? In my quest searching for the school's mysteries, I had come across a mini-gallery located outside of the principal's office, with portraits of the school's previous principals. I wasn't sure what I would find here, but this office was the one place students avoided like the plague unless they had some work to do. The most interesting thing I had discovered was that during Masuda Kyoku's tenure, the Black Fire case occurred. What had become of the woman after that? I doubt after such a thing happened under her responsibility, she would have progressed in her career. I searched her name on my smartphone out of curiosity. If I had been drinking water, I would have spit over my screen right then.
She's running for mayor?
I hissed, before looking around to see if anyone had heard my outburst, and also running an ether scan to see if, by chance, any angel or demon had been in my vicinity to hear it. I think the greater surprise was when I actually felt something, a dark element close to me. Silently, I walked out towards the school grounds, keeping my pace normal. The presence followed me. It was my afternoon break, and I still had around 20 minutes left before the next class. Going behind the school building, a place void of any students except a few security cameras that had some not-so-obvious blind spot, I stopped.
When are you going to come out? Do you need an invite?
I spoke, charging up my core, ready for combat.
You would not be remiss in sending me an invite, Aquos greeted, fading into existence with a violet aura seeping off of him.
His blue hair ruffled in the breeze, his red eyes fixed upon me. He was dressed in the same uniform as me, blending in the school as a student.
It's been a while, boy.
Chapter 4.
slipping in between. Shiragane Nagisa had been avoiding Ryosaki Luka. After she had been kidnapped by Yuri, that damn demon, Nagisa had given up hope of being rescued. Angels, demons, magic, it was all over her head. She couldn't even protect herself. What hope did she have of protecting the people who relied on her, who needed her from magic? The demon had kept her captive underground beneath the basement of the laboratory building of her school.
Oh, but you are so special. Special in so many ways you don't even know,
Yuri-sensei had said, her red, glowing eyes raving Nagisa's body, sending shivers down the girl's spine. Nagisa, thinking herself to be only human, had spat in the woman's face. That earned her a sharp slap to her face and the taste of metal in her mouth, blood seeping through her lips.
Behave yourself, girl. I am not wrong. I am never wrong. There is potential in you. Why don't you join hands with me, daughter of Naoto? No?
She had been down here without any sense of day or night, fed scraps from the school cafeteria to keep her alive yet weak. Nagisa was fully done with the woman, even before she had called her the daughter of a man who didn't know the first thing about being a father.
Buck, you,
Nagisa whispered, staring into those hypnotic red eyes. The basement grew colder, her breath misting immediately.
Language, student,
Yuri-sensei said dangerously, and the next Nagisa knew, she felt like a hand of ice and grabbed her stomach and squeezed, the cold burning her insides. Nagisa hadn't screamed when she had fallen down her heavy bike and fractured an arm, but when the frigid sensation seeped inside her stomach and she could feel it freezing the contents of her stomach, her screams echoed throughout the basement.
That should do it for discipline. You'll do fine as a hostage as well. Don't worry, you won't be so lonely. Your friends are going to be here soon as well.
That was the last day Nagisa had been stuck there. Yuri-sensei hadn't lied about her removing her loneliness, but how did Ryosaki classify as her friend? Sure, he had an air of urgency around him and didn't fool around much. He had also been the one to save her, which was a blow to her pride as well. One demon had landed her in trouble, and another had helped her out of it. If demons didn't exist, Nagisa wouldn't have been in trouble in the first place. If only demons didn't exist, this unfair life would have been slightly fair. What was a normal person supposed to do? What was the police supposed to do if they ran into one and the demon decided to do as they pleased? After getting out from that basement, Nagisa had used Ryosaki to get back to her home, her actual home, the large studio room above the arcade her friends ran in the commercial sector of the city. And she had not spoken a single word to him despite his concern over her. It was unsettling her. Why did he care about her when they weren't even friends? What did he have to gain? Perhaps he was into her? Nagisa knew she was attractive, even if she had been forced to become aware of that attractiveness before she had run away from home. If that was the case, Ryosaki was incredibly naive. Countless men had tried to ask her out, thinking they could handle her, but in the end, they hadn't been able to deal with the scars Nagisa had accumulated, especially when the trauma of her past would rear her head. Now, as she lay in bed in just her panties, not even bothering to go on the first day of school, the green-haired girl wondered why the hell was she thinking about Ryosaki in the first place. She had ghosted plenty of people before. What's so different now?
That's it. I'm going to deal with this right now.
If she got dressed now, she would still have time for the afternoon classes. Instead of pulling this band-aid one follicle at a time, Shiragane Nagisa would just rip it off at once and get it done with.
It's been a while, boy,
Aquos greeted me, dressed like a student. He had made an effort, but he wasn't bothering to do things like breathing to keep up the human facade.
It has, I said, tilting my head. Also, it's boy now instead of half-breed?
Careful, I feel like you might want a favor from me if you're being that polite.
And that is your angel side speaking. No love for word plays, cutting straight to the business,
Aquos replied, still not revealing his reasons.
Time is precious, isn't it?
I had to get back to class as well.
Fond of truisms, aren't you?
Aquos muttered. In a louder voice, he continued,
I just came to offer you a word of warning. If you blatantly push into the black fire case,
you're going to end up revealing yourself. You have no idea how lucky you have been up until now. If it weren't for my disagreements with the president, you'd have been dead by now, or worse, Aquos said. What are you saying? I asked. Why would I be dead?
I don't know for sure who taught you, but that person interfered with your ether. The balance of your darkness and light keeps you alive, without acting as a siren for every angel and demon to know an abomination is walking about.
An abomination? Me? I gritted my teeth.
Yeah.
Aquos's words cut through me ruthlessly.
Supernatural beings with mixed heritages like us can't be trusted, and are killed whenever they are found. Can you imagine the emotions of a human left in charge of this power?
Aren't the angels and demons who get close to one another to have children the abominable beings? Isn't love an emotion as well? I replied sardonically.
Aquos shook his head slowly. I am just telling you how things are. There is a line you are dangerously close to crossing, and you weren't even aware of it. You wouldn't be remiss to show some gratitude.
Well, you have my thanks. Are you going to show up again?
Of course. I have a task for you. One you might be keen to take up, considering just who is running for mayor this time. Farewell, boy.
Wait, do you know something about Masuda Kyoko? I stepped forward, but just as he had appeared, Aquos disappeared in a wisp of purple smoke.
Ch. I clicked my tongue, revisiting the conversation and processing all of its details. Masuda Kyoko had something to do with the supernatural. She was also running for mayor of the city, which would have required a brilliant PR campaign as she was the one who was forced to take responsibility and resign, among many others after the Black Fire incident occurred at this school 7 years ago. And if I were to come under her radar, I would be painting a target on my back as an angel-slash-demon hybrid.
Was she a demon? I pondered, walking back towards the classes.
First things first, then. Finding out Masuda Shuhei's relationship with the former principal. I feel like I wasn't meant to reach my class in time anyways, as I ran into someone I had not been expecting.
Nagisa-senpai, I greeted.
Ryusaki, she greeted back, staring into my eyes. The two of us stood there, not saying another word. I was relieved that Nagisa-senpai was talking to me again, although I would have understood if she had refused to ever face me again. I was not like her. One of them. For someone as self-reliant and rational as her, it must have grated her soul to be at the mercy of beings, us, with no way to fight back. I had failed to come up with a way for a human to fight back against angels and demons as well, except through military force. Angels and demons were not infallible, but it would take many lives of humans to snuff out one of ours.
Damn it, what do I say to her?
Have you been well?
Yeah, I've been...
There was a definite pause.
Fine.
I winced at her cold tone.
That's good, then. So, if that's all, I've got a class to attend to.
I awkwardly shifted, walking forward. Senpei's hand shot out, and I let her grab my collar. She pulled me closer to her face, her eyes staring into mine.
Is there something still?
I asked, feeling my heartbeat accelerate.
This was strange. I wasn't in a combat situation, and I was fairly certain Nagisa-senpai had no romantic feelings for me. So why were we so close?
Your face has gotten thinner. Are you eating well?
She touched my face, and I could feel the calluses on her hand.
Her skin wasn't soft and moisturized like one would expect from a distance. Hell, her hand was rougher than mine.
I've been eating well. There's no cause for concern, I replied.
Oh,
Nagisa-senpai breathed near my ear. I could feel the blood rushing to my face.
I see. You live alone, don't you?
Was she trying to get payback for something?
I grabbed her wrist and pulled myself away. I do, but you can ask me normally, and... Sorry, I don't have an answer to your question yet. I thought about it all summer as well. As soon as I find one, I'll let you know.
Her amber eyes widened.
You were still thinking about it?
Well, it's a societal problem if you think about it, I folded my arms. Why was she so surprised? I always followed the answers to the end.
Now, if you'll excuse me, just answer one question.
Nagisa-senpai bowed her head, grabbing my uniform's sleeve. Her green bangs covered her eyes, hiding her expression.
Are you single?
What?
Of course I am. Do I look like someone who has time for... Want to go on a date?
Senpai asked.
Pardon? We can go to an arcade and then a cafe where you can do your homework and shite. Half play, half work. Cool?
Really, Senpai? I deadpanned. What was the situation?
Hey, I'll pay.
Well, if she was putting it like that, there was a new coffee place I wanted to try out.
Sure.
You are so easy to read, Nagisa-senpai shook her head, although it felt like she was being sarcastic.
Luka-kun, class is about to start.
Arya-chan walked up to us in the corridor.
I've been searching everywhere for you. You're usually back 10 minutes before the break ends. Oh, good afternoon, senpai.
She bowed to Nagisa, noticing her. My senior, who had just asked, bribed more like, me on a date, was pointedly looking away from Arya. Nagisa-senpai knew Arya went to our school, but Arya did not know about her.
Later then.
Later then. I waved to her and began to walk back with my classmate.
Who was that girl, Luka-kun?
Arya-chan asked, a smile fixed on her face. For some reason, I felt a chill go down my spine.
No one in particular. Just a senior. We were discussing plans to study together.
Oh. Does Luka-kun study with a lot of girls then?
You're being weird, Arya-chan. Not to mention slightly scary.
I'm not being weird at all. You're coming to my house this Friday, aren't you?
Arya continued to talk with that scary smile. Seriously, what is up with this girl?
Sorry, I already have plans for Friday. Isn't Saturday better?
I tried to placate her, not sure about what I was doing wrong, but certain that something felt wrong.
Arya was pouting now.
I bet you're going to study with that girl on Friday.
Not sure if I was supposed to hear that or not, I refrained from commenting, reaching our class in silence. Chapter 5. Spirit of the Wind. Wind traveled back and forth. It took information from one place to another. I would describe Masuda Shuhei as the wind. The guy was almost impossible to find on my own before his stated meeting time. I sat down in the corner of the library at a table for four, as he had suggested, and simply waiting, going over my class notes. It was 4:30 when he appeared, silently nodding to me as he sat down as well.
Good afternoon, Ruka-san. Our future club members should be joining us soon.
There's only going to be four? I asked. Four members were enough to have a small club. Four wasn't enough to pull whatever this guy was trying to pull.
Yes. I assure you, only the highest quality people I could find are in on this, and have reason to be. By the way, did you find any new school secrets yet?
There are certain drinks in this school with historical events and dates hidden on the label instead of ingredients.
Heh, I didn't know about that, but seems likely. Trust the number one student to find a secret like that. Sounds more like a fun thing to know than actually useful, though.
Shuhei opened up his cell phone, an old-fashioned flip phone for some reason, and begin to text someone.
I think so, too. Perhaps there need to be some obvious clues about the school having funny coincidences before you discover that alcoholic beverages are also available in the school, I remarked, flipping a page.
Shuhei looked up from his phone.
Really? I know that you can order cigarettes of your choice in the boys' toilet, but alcohol's a first. Did you try it?
I didn't have the money. In the second-floor boys' bathroom behind the leftmost mirror is a minibar, but everything has a price listed, so it can be restocked for the sake of public good.
You just didn't want to drink.
Well, that too.
Hey, what too, Ryazaki?
Kishimoto Kate butted in on our conversation, taking the seat next to me.
I see Shuhei-senpai has gathered you here as well. Oh, and we're classmates. Feel free to use my first name. Well, then... Ruka-san, right? Call me Kei, too.
Kei-san, I acknowledged.
Can I ask why you're here? He said he wanted to make a club. I think that's pure bullshit, but you never know. He is Shuhei-senpai after all.
Wait, is this guy famous? I looked at the blonde across the table.
Why, course he is! Do you live under a rock or something? He's the student council vice president, Masuda Shuhei.
Wait, what? The one helping me break the rules and play hooky while challenging the systems of the school was a part of the system himself?
Oh, Kei-chan, you told him already? I was waiting until he figured it out by himself.
My eye twitched as the student council's VP pouted. Kusasaki's student council didn't wield some sort of legendary power like the rumors about our school went, but it was linked to both academic and extracurricular performance. The majority of the council members were from the second year, and they were in the top five rankings. This meant that despite his facade, Shuhei was no slouch in studies as well, on top of his vice president duties. It also explained why he was so intimate with the workings of the school, as opposed to just having obtained secrets from his older brother.
"The last member should be arriving soon," Shuhei said, putting away his phone. "We will begin at once when she comes. I expect you guys to hit the ground running and run, understood?"
"Hey, bastard, you're lucky I even came to school today." Nagisa-senpei emerged from the bookcases, shooting a glance towards me before she took her place beside me.
"Aw, Nagisa-chan, be polite. We're in the presence of our cute little Kohai,"
Shuhei-senpei chided. Kei-yu leaned close to me to whisper.
"Just me? Or does she smell like smokes?"
I just pinched the bridge of my nose.
So we gathered at one table, a gossip queen, a gang leader, a student council member, and me, the antisocial nerd.
"Ahem," Shuhei-senpei cleared his throat.
"Let's begin. We all know of the Black Fire incident from 7 years ago, correct?"
I nodded, mildly surprised that so did Nagisa-senpei and Kei-san.
"Well," Shuhei-senpei sighed, "my mother, who was the principal of the school at the time, began to act quite differently from that day onward. The investigation into the matter was headed by then-Inspector Shiragane Naoto."
Nagisa-senpei stiffened at the mention of her father.
"And soon the fire was announced to be an accident. Everyone went on with their lives as normal, or every normal person went on with their lives as normal."
Shuhei-senpei tapped a finger against the desk.
"I've done my research, and black flames are scientifically impossible to produce. Such was the opinion of the reporter Sakurai Kishimoto, before he too had a change of heart. Strange, very strange. All of these coincidences,"
here his voice dripped with sarcasm,
"suppressed the news of what could have been a terrorist attack. The blame shifted to the construction company, who scapegoated a few employees. It was all very sad."
Damn, he really was on the mark. But I couldn't help feeling like the other shoe had yet to drop. At this table was the daughter of the police officer who had investigated the case, a girl whose father had covered the story in the press, and the son of a woman under whose supervision such an oversight occurred.
"Wait a minute, how does Ruka-san fit into this then?"
Kei-san asked the question which was on my mind.
"Oh, him. Because he has experience." Shuhei-senpei didn't reveal any information to his answer.
"What sort of experience? Does he also have his family involved in this?"
"I'm an orphan," I pointed out, my tone dry, and three sets of eyes blinked.
"Why are you looking at me like that?"
Sorry, I didn't know,"
Kishimoto apologized to me. I knew it was a standard to apologize if someone revealed a bad memory or event, but I hadn't even known my parents. I just awkwardly nodded.
"Don't mention it."
Shuhei-senpei mused, face slightly serious.
"You wouldn't happen to have been raised in Hope Orphanage, would you?"
It was my turn to be surprised.
"Why?
Do you know anything about it?"
"Let's talk about that another time. For now, let's focus on the task at hand, everyone. Are you on board with me?"
Shuhei asked.
"You have a week to think everything through. After that, I want your answer. Not before a week, nor after it. Any questions?"
"Yeah," Nagisa-senpei piped up. "What's in this for you? I feel like your mother is a lot more involved in this than you let on."
"If you choose to join me, you're going to learn many things. What you should know before that is, should you join and then attempt to wiggle your way out of your promise, Shiragane, things won't end well for you."
Gone was his cheery aura, replaced by a razor-sharp smile. Nagisa snickered.
"These are your true colors, right? A wolf in sheep's clothing?"
"I'll have you know sheep are cuter than wolves,"
Shuhei-senpei flipped his hair, changing back to his usual self in an instant.
"All right, I got places to be. Later, everyone."
Kei-san excused herself, leaving the table. I hadn't meant to stare, but I was caught off guard by how short her skirt was. Panty flashes in real life? Does that shit even happen? Nagisa Senpei turned to me. Give me your contact, Ryuzaki. Right, I said, feeling a bit strange as I took out my phone and we exchanged mail addresses. Well then, I've got a book to read. I picked up my notes before exiting fast. I didn't want to be alone with Nagisa Senpei in case Arya-chan saw us. Wait, why did I care about her finding me with another girl? I had nothing to be afraid of. Shrugging off the strange new feeling, I headed back towards my apartment, slinking into the shadows to avoid socializing for the rest of the day. Nagisa was mildly annoyed at the boy for escaping, but she couldn't really blame him. She had come on a bit strong for his virgin self. Upon learning that he had still been thinking about the answer to her question, she had to reevaluate her opinions of him. Instead of connection, thinking him as just someone who couldn't care less for things that weren't his problem. If she had said as such, Luca would heartily disagree that as long as something did not pose to be some sort of a problem or injustice, he wouldn't care less for what happened, or the things people said or did. Still, Nagisa wanted to know more about him, not just his connection to the Black Fire case, which had granted that loathsome wealth her father had come in possession of, that tainted money which she would have rather burnt than spent. Nagisa noticed her breaths becoming shorter, her heart drumming inside her ears. She exited the school and mounted her bike, not bothering to wear the helmet before hitting the road, the engine of her bike roaring as she accelerated. Speed always calmed her, giving her an escape. She continued driving down the roads, thinking about Shuhei, that pompous brat's offer. Nagisa wanted to knock her so-called father off his high horse. The man could never see any wrong in himself and was very quick to turn to blows. It was a lesson Nagisa learned early in life when she had been beaten for asking where her mother had gone. When she got older, the girl had realized that her mother had just up and left the abusive bastard, who played the confident, cool, and calm policeman on the outside and took out his frustration the moment he stepped inside his house. The chance to wipe her father's self-righteousness was reason enough for Nagisa to join Shuhei's adventure. But when she thought about her friends whom she had lost due to the angels he commanded, Nagisa tisked, picking up the front wheel of her bike, wheeling as she picked up even more speed. 1 week. After that, she'd have her answers. At the cost of working with that manipulative son of a bitch Shuhei, as well as that girl who had made her name known as a reporter for the Kusasaki Student Press Club, Kishimoto Kei. From what Nagisa had heard, she was headstrong, unafraid of poking her head in any matter. Her father was an established reporter based in Tokyo, while she lived in this city for high school. That girl was going to be in for sure as well. The question was about Ryuzaki. What was the boy's connection to the Black Fire case? In an unknown apartment different from her listed address in school records, Kishimoto Kei browsed through the old local newspapers on her phone, lying among dice-shaped cushions on the floor of her room. In a corner of the room, a projector displayed images of a white-haired student. They ranged from sneaky shots taken during class, with a foreign cell phone that did not make a shutter sound, unlike the ones available in Japan, to animated GIFs showcasing the boy's movements during a practice soccer match. To most people, it would look like a stalker's shrine. Most people would be right. Kay finished researching and shut off her phone. She shifted into a cross-legged position, staring at her wall filled with shots of Luca. Her dear Luca. Finally, a chance to be next to you, she whispered, her cheeks tinged with red. Chapter 6. History isn't the only place for dates. Nagisa Senpei looked quite, well, I didn't know what words to use. Underneath her crimson jacket, she was dressed in a black V-cut crop top which showed off her ample cleavage and pierced navel, and skinny ripped jeans hugging her legs, leaving nothing to the imagination. In my semi-formal attire, a blue shirt with a loosely knotted black tie and jeans, I felt like we weren't quite coordinated in terms of outfits. "Ready to go?" she asked, leaning against her bike. I began to question if giving her the address of my apartment building was a wise choice. Yes, I nodded, and she tossed a helmet at me to catch. Securing it around my head, I was internally glad that I had not bothered to style my hair. I sat behind and gripped my knees. What are you doing? Nagisa Senpei snapped. Hold on to me or you're going to fall off. With that, she reached back and grabbed my wrists, bringing her hands forward. I started a little as my hands grazed her breasts before she dropped them at her waist, exposed due to her crop top. I was at a loss, but to not draw her ire again, I gathered my wits and hugged her waist, regardless of her bare skin. We're going, Nagisa-senpei said and revved the engine. The cars and signs blurred as she accelerated through the roads, navigating her way through the traffic without bothering to stop. I didn't know where she was leading me, but I hoped it wasn't far. I wanted to be back by 11 o'clock to study. We rode to a karaoke place, surprisingly. I didn't know you sang, Nagisa-senpei, I commented, following her lead. I don't sing, she said quietly, and stop calling me senpei from now on. Call me Nagisa, and I'll call you Ruka. Did she want to be on equal terms, or did she actually want to get close to me? While I pondered these thoughts, Nagisa went to the counter and got us to a room. It was then that it struck me that it was just going to be the two of us together in a soundproof room. Come on, Nagisa said, tracing her way towards the booth effortlessly and pushing the door open. Have you been here before? A few times. Sit down, she said, taking off her jacket and hanging it on one of the hooks attached on the wall. The booth we were in was small, with seating for four people. There was a table with a small tablet on it for a song selection, I assumed, along with a telephone for some reason and a food and drink menu. A screen was mounted on the blank wall, animated bubbles playing across it as a screensaver. So are we going to sing? I asked, sitting down. Nagisa plopped down next to me, throwing her arm behind me. No, I just like this place. Quiet and you can talk here, unlike a library. A bit expensive to stay here, but things do have a price. You want to order something? She replied. I barely managed to catch her, though, attention more on the arm behind me. Not really. I was looking forward to visiting the new cafe. You're just trying to save money and eat only at that cafe you wanted to, aren't you? Nagisa narrowed her eyes. What's it called, anyway? It's called Copper, I replied, neither confirming nor denying her suspicions. And it opened recently. I can't figure out if you're poor or just a cheapskate, Ruka. She used my first name for the first time. My heart felt a little weird and indescribable at being called so closely by an older girl. I just only eat what I need. And by the way, it's Luca, not Ruka. Luca? She mimicked. Correct, Nagisa. What the hell, brain? Why did you stutter when trying to say her name? There's nothing wrong with wanting to taste different things. Nagisa leaned forward, both her hands in her lap now, her arms pushing her breasts together and making her cleavage more prominent. The smirk on her face told me that she had caught my wandering gaze and, if anything, seemed amused by it. She leaned closer to me, pressing her body against mine. So, don't you want a taste? A taste of what? I deadpanned, trying to put some distance between us. Moving away wasn't the correct course of action as Nagisa leaned further over me, bringing her hand down to caress my face. I don't know. Have you ever tried chapstick? She bit her bottom lip for a minute. For the briefest moment, I contemplated using my powers to stop her advances. It wasn't that I hated them, it was just I was impartial to them, except for certain things. It felt weird. Heh. Kidding. Nagisa winked and moved back, seating herself at a distance. I felt my train of thought crash into a tunnel. Pardon, what? Did you really think I was going to kiss you? Are you saying you don't want to? I felt relieved almost, the small alarms that had been sounding in my head quieting down. Not on the first date, no. The alarms went back up. Wait, we have to go on more dates? Relax. You should just go out from time to time. But your antisocial tendencies are not why we are here. Tell me, Luca, are you going to join hands with Shuhei? Ah, I see. You could have just told me we were here to discuss something serious. We are, but it's fun teasing you, she smirked, a tiny twist of her lips. I don't get teased, I deadpanned. My green-haired senior raised an eyebrow before letting herself fall to the side of the sofa we were on, the movement causing her chest to jiggle. Interestingly? Wow, you really are bad at telling your emotions, Nagisa surmised,
Is that because of your demon powers? I know they think very differently from us. Which was sort of true. I don't know why I felt like after everything she had said and shown, it would not be a wise idea to discuss today's events with Arya-chan, but back to the topic at hand. Yes, they have some traits in extreme one way or another, both angels and demons. The most dangerous ones are those with chaotic alignments. Things never end well with anyone who runs into one of them, I said, thankful for the familiar topic at hand.
Oh, that's cool. Now, tell me more about yourself.
About myself? Like, my powers, etc.?
No, yourself. Your personality, hobbies, future aspirations and stuff.
She waved a hand like she was least bothered about the information I had to offer.
Why don't you start with yourself? I said, folding my arms as I leaned back.
Well, she began, tugging a green bang around her finger. My hobbies are taking care of my bike, karate, and working out. My favorite subject is physics, and a favorite book?
Can't really say.
That's unexpected, I said. Why would you mention physics and a book?
Because the only way to get your attention is to talk about school, Nagisa muttered. So, your turn.
I study a lot, but I don't particularly like studying. I read a lot, but I don't like reading that much either. I thought about getting a part-time job or a hobby, but in the end, I couldn't decide. I sighed.
If you don't like those things, why do you do them?
Nagisa cocked her head to the side, bangs brushing her shoulder. Because the research has to be done somehow. I need to stay at the school to get a lead on the Black Fire case. That's the only reason I'm going to Kusasaki High, where the only way to have all your fees waived off is to acquire the overall first position.
I see. So you came specifically for that case to the school?
Very much so.
You are more damn obsessed with it than I thought.
Nagisa cupped her chin.
Really, what is your story? Was it caused by someone of your kind, those black flames? Are you trying to track them down or something?
I just shook my head.
Okay, I'll go first. The police commissioner, Shiragane Naoto, she said, her voice dull and monotone, was just an inspector. He was tasked with investigating the cause of the fire, but the plans for the building were foolproof, and the company which built the laboratory was a very reputable one. But someone, the investigation yielded that it was the company's fault, a company my mother worked at. She smirked, bitterly and ironically. That man was opposed to my mother working in the first place. She was an architect at that company, had nothing to do with the Kusasaki High Laboratory. But when the reputation took a dive, the company's future began to go down. I listened, focusing on every detail. I guess this is when things began to look bad for the workers, but not the higher-ups.
Yes, my mother had to quit and find a job elsewhere. Due to the constant fighting and mother's strong suspicions that Inspector Naoto lied for a bribe, judging by the new house we were getting, she landed a job in another city and just took off. I was only 10. She left and didn't take me with her.
Nagisa finished, letting the silence hang in the air.
I don't know what to say to that, I admitted.
I will get my revenge on that old man, I swear it.
Nagisa almost growled.
But enough about me. Talk about yourself. What's your story?
Why is Shuhei trying to recruit you as well? The indirect question hung in the air.
He had an idea of what orphanage I went to, so perhaps that might be why he came to me.
Hope Orphanage, right? As in, we hope you get adopted, otherwise we're kicking you out once you get into high school?
Nagisa mused. That's the one. Overcrowded, short of resources, filled with unwanted bastards. Someone who worked there was a teacher at Kusasaki High once, I think. That's how I found out about all the perks and benefits of the school, I confessed, feeling a little queasy inside. I want to find that person, at least, and I think if I try to unravel the incident which occurred when he went missing, I might find some clues.
And who was that person? Nagisa said softly, covering my hand with her own calloused one.
Why did it feel so nice to have a girl hold my hand? A small part of my brain questioned.
That person, I breathed with a slight shudder, my emotions feeling weird. I called him Nissan.
My statement shocked Nagisa.
Oh,
she just stated, somewhat numb.
You had your family taken away by what happened, huh? Taken away? I guess you could put it that way. How was I supposed to tell her, tell anyone in fact, that Nissan might have been one of the people behind the whole damn thing in the first place?
Yes, you can say that. How about we get some coffee now? That place also has cakes, if you're into them.
Sure.
Let's go, Luca.
The rest of this date was quite normal. We rode to the new place, named Coffee Star, after I consulted its website for the coordinates. It was a casual affair, with ambient lighting and no background music, and very small. We talked about school and physics, Nagisa's favorite subject, as she had described it. I ordered a black coffee with no sugar, while Nagisa ordered a slice of coffee cake with whipped cream.
Is there a reason you drink so much black coffee? Is it some sort of demon thing?
Nagisa eyed the tall glass. I removed the lid and the straw, taking a sip directly from the cup. It's an old habit. Coffee was something the woman in charge of the orphanage banned everyone from using, so, of course, I had to get a taste. And let me tell you, that was the most delicious thing I had ever tasted, without any milk or sugar. To this day, I am in search of that blend I used to steal from that cramped kitchen. And it was the best. A bitter, robust blend with a slightly salty aftertaste, like the sea breeze. I had sampled more than 30 brands of coffee and cafes, but had still not found the one. Going back to that place, even to ask for what blend, was out of the question.
Well, I know a guy who knows how to get rare items. Do you remember anything about the packaging?
No, I didn't sneak in there with light. I'd have been caught instantly, I huffed.
I suppose so.
Nagisa gave a wry smile.
Doesn't mean you stopped, did you?
Nope. The evening turned to night, and we soon parted ways. I slunk through the shadows and emerged from the backside of a convenience store near my apartment building, walking the rest of the way home. I needed a walk to clear my mind and organize my thoughts. I knew that I was going to join hands with Shuhei Senpei sooner or later to pick at his brain, but I was against the idea of forming a student club. Then there was also the little bit of information I had gotten from Aquos, but it came with a string attached as well, one that worried far more than whatever Shuhei Senpei might try to cook up. It was like Nagisa and all other humans who knew about the existence of our kind feared deep down. We could melt into the shadows, disappearing into thin air, walk through flames and plunge into water without needing to breathe. Some of us can do all these things even. Speaking of Aquos, I spread out my senses as I walked. Unexpectedly, instead of detecting the dark energy of Aquos this time, I found the subtle, sweet ether of Arya-chan. Looking up, I found her trailing outside my apartment building. She was dressed casually, wearing a pink camisole dress over a white off-shoulder top.
Hey, Arya-chan, I greeted, walking up to her, hands in my pockets. What brings you here?
Luca-kun,
she said, as if just noticing me. Was she distracted or something?
She walked up to me, hands tied behind her back.
I was just walking by and wondered which one was your flat.
Why do you want to know my address? I asked.
Well, I can come in and cook breakfast every day.
Arya nodded.
Make it every day for the rest of your life, nay?
I planted my right fist over my left palm, connecting the dots.
I see. Basically, you want to be a housekeeper.
Luca-kun!
Arya-chan gritted her teeth, balling her hand into a fist.
That's not what I meant.
Then what did you mean? I backed away slowly, raising my hands in placation.
You really don't know anything about a maiden's heart,
she huffed, pouting angrily.
To be frank, I didn't know much about my own heart.
Wait a minute, maiden?
Which maiden? I don't see any here.
Luca-kun,
Arya spit out like a robot.
Do you want to live?
Apparently not, I quipped.
Where were you anyway? I was under the impression that you never left your house except for grocery shopping,
Arya asked. I was on a date with Nagisa. Senpei. I added Senpei as an afterthought on instinct. It didn't really go well, nor was it really a date, though. I just wanted to go to bed and get some sleep now.
Oh, not really a date, huh?
Arya-chan looked towards the ground.
Then how about you go on one of those not-really dates with me as well? We'll go to the library first so you can finish your studies for the day, then we'll go where I want, she suggested.
Kei's words came back to me about why people date. Was this sort of accommodation among humans normal?
Sure, I said. I'd like that.
Then it's settled.
Yeah, I'd like to spend some time with friends my age as well. Can we visit your house that day as well? We could study there instead of going to school or a library and meet your mother as well. Why was she pouting again?
Oh, well. I started to walk towards the entrance, a cold wind caressing my skin. Soon, we'd be wearing our winter uniforms as well, even though I didn't feel the effects of weather as much as the normal person. The air conditioner in my small studio apartment had never been turned on. Case in point.
While you're here, why don't you come in?
I'm tired.
Really?
And then for some inexplicable reason, she jumped at me, throwing her arms around my neck and hugging me. Considering I was only wearing a thin hoodie and Arya-chan was pressing hard against me, I could, in fact, feel both of her breasts squishing against my chest, and they were the softest things I ever had the fortune or misfortune to encounter.
Luka-kun, your face is all red. Are you all right?
Arya asked, completely oblivious. What the hell?
Yeah, absolutely.
This has been Paragon, Red Eye, Volume 3, Light Novel, Harem. Genre, ecchi, harem, demons, mystery, romance, and school life. Written by Lai Yuramoto. Narrated by Jimmy Pearson. Copyright 2019 by Lai Yuramoto. Production copyright by Lai Yuramoto.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.